Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast, where we don't have to wait today at all. There's a new Doom Patrol issue out right this second.
Woohoo! Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can also reach us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com or on our Facebook page. You can also check out mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, where a friend of the show, Doug Zavisha, has lots of excellent extra Doom Patrol-related stuff. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com.
Yeah, I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at @reading_hicks. And you can also get in touch with our Sentient Show Twitter account, which is Wilfred, who's at WFDpod on the Twitter. And we are sponsored by Comicosity, the comic book website.
Yes, love Comicosity.com. My pick for this week is an article that Michael Hale has written titled The Importance of All-Star Superman and Comic Thought. And it's a really interesting article because Michael is an English teacher, and how he's using comics to sort of inspire and encourage his students to get them to think differently and then put those new thought processes into their own writing to hopefully improve it. So, I've still got to read All-Star Superman one of these days.
I've read it. It is inspiring. It's got some really nice bits. There's a really good bit where a girl's about to commit suicide and Superman intervenes.
That scene is mentioned in the article, and you know, the student is saying to Michael, you know, well, I don't like Superman comics, but, you know, and the next day he comes back and says, well, I read it, and I never knew a comic like this could make me cry. So it's some moving stuff right there. So yeah, that's a really cool article, and you can check that out and lots of other cool stuff on comicosity.com.
Good one.
So anyway, Paul, how has your week in comics and life and such been this week?
Well, I won't talk about life and such, but comics has been fine. I've had a number of books come in from the library. I have gotten into the habit of looking at the things I want to read and deciding whether to buy them or not, and getting the library to buy the ones that I'm not sure about. So they did that. They bought Swamp Thing Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Brian K. Vaughan, which I'd never – well, I had a few issues here and there, but I'd never read the full run. Yeah, it's a mixed bag. When this came out, this was after the very long run that Mark Miller ended with, I think, issue 171. So this was the next volume after that. And so it's Vertigo. And this was Brian K. Vaughan before he was known as Brian K. Vaughan, the writer that everyone loves. He was just another writer. And, yeah, the first trade, a lot of it is really overwritten. And and I think he was struggling because one of the things he does is have a protagonist in Tefi, who's Tefe or whatever you want to say. She is Swamp Thing's daughter, and she is really unlikable.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like totally. Like, yeah, not a Brian K. Vaughan protagonist at all. But for the second trade, it actually sort of works its way into better stories, but it's very Vertigo. Like, there's lots of violence and swearing violence, gore, and you know, it's pretty rough stuff. But the second volume I'm enjoying much more, and it's sort of it's coming to a very satisfying conclusion, which I've almost reached. So, and the art is by Giuseppe Camuncoli, which I love to say, who was on Hellblazer and things like that afterwards. It's pretty good. And there's an issue in the first trade which has art by Paul Pope and a few other people. It's really good. So so some pretty good art, some mixed story, but you can see the Brian K. Vaughan that we know and love sort of emerging through the murk of the run. So, so there's only two trades, and that's, I think, like 20 issues, and that was the entire run. So, yeah, but it was a little bit of a Swamp Thing blind spot for me because I pride myself on being quite comprehensive with my Swamp Thing loving, but I... yeah, I didn't like enough of what I'd read of this to really commit, so...
Okay.
So, thanks to the library. Thank you.
Thanks, library.
What about you, Mike?
I actually caught up this past weekend on a bunch of comics. I'm finally tackling the to-read pile. So I've got a few trades sitting there to get through, but and now I've got new single issues to eventually get through. But the ones I caught up on are Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, which is still one of my favorite Marvel books. It literally makes me laugh out loud. It's so preposterous and crazy. Basically, Squirrel Girl taking on Mole Man. And Mole Man suddenly developing affection for Squirrel Girl and trying to make her his Mole Man.
So, Mole Lady.
Yeah, so that was such a good fun read. What else did I catch up? Uncanny Avengers. They're bringing Ultron back in. So okay, sure. Unfollow is still a brilliant read. From Vertigo, about, you know, 140 people that have basically won the lottery. And so, of course, each of them has an equal share of this dead billionaire's personal fortune. And it's not really enforced, but, you know, if one of them dies, then the amount that gets split up gets recalculated. So, of course, they all start dropping like flies. So the issue I got up to, they're down to 133 people left.
Whoa.
So they're getting there. Another really good series that I actually picked up at Heroes Con this year because I'd heard good things about it but didn't really know anything about it at all, was a series called The Violent, which I think was going to be an ongoing, but at the end of the fourth issue it said, sorry, we're wrapping up next issue. So, and of course, I don't have the fifth issue. And it's killing me because it's a really well done crime story set in Toronto about a couple that are kind of down on their luck and some very unfortunate things happen to them and people they know. And so I've got to track down that fifth issue because it's really good. It's really, really good. And the other big ones I caught up on was recent issues of The Wicked and Divine, where basically all hell's breaking loose between the Pantheon and the gods are all punching each other all over the place. And I finally got round to reading Wonder Woman, the new Rebirth series.
Ah.
So I read the Rebirth one-shot and then the first four issues of that. And holy jeez, that is a gorgeous book.
Yeah, some beautiful art in that one.
It's just so... And I love the way they've got the year one story and then the present day story, you know, alternating between issues. I just really enjoyed the way they've done that.
And did you read them in sequence or did you split them into each story and read them?
I read them in numerical sequence. So I was sort of going back and forth. So yeah, I'm wacky like that. So, but I'll probably go back and as more of them come out, I will probably go back and read them as separate timeline entities, so to speak. But, that's so well done. It's just, yeah. And a member of the Doom Patrol family, Matthew Clark on art.
Yeah.
As well, which is great to see, you know, new stuff from Matthew as well. So hello, Matthew, if you're listening. I'm sure you are.
Hey, Matt.
But yeah, that I was quite happy to finally get caught up on those books. There's some great reading there. So yeah, it was good stuff indeed.
Good stuff. Sweet.
Anyway, how about we have a look at what's going down on Darrington Way?
Certainly. So, there's a few bits and pieces of news. So, there were Nick Darrington, as we call him, he tweeted a picture of some art and development, and it looked like a clown floating in the air. Sort of on his back, and I don't know if he's getting in on all the clown frenzy that's sweeping the globe at the moment with dangerous clowns everywhere.
If you're going to cash in on anything, that.
Yeah.
Good work, Nick.
And there was an interview with Jared and Nick on IO9 this week, and the interesting tidbits that I got from that was Jared said there's not just weirdness for weirdness' sake in Doom Patrol, and there's an observation about Casey Brink and the fact that she doesn't react strongly to weird things happening around her because it's, you know, like her flatmate. Sort of what happens to him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she said he said that the external stuff is not a big deal and it allows you to have a focus on the internal. of the characters, which is interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. And he is still catching up on volume 3 and 4, and yet to read them. So, Jared, if you're listening, we covered them on the show recently. Episode 67 and episode 73.
Yeah. We've done the work for you, Jared.
So, and we recommend them highly. They're one of my favorites. I saw someone bagging them on Twitter this week, and
really.
Yeah, someone chatting to Martin Gray was saying how crap they were, and I respectfully disagree.
I didn't see that conversation.
And one other thing is the Cave Carson Has a Cybernetic Eye, which comes out next week. There will be a backup feature in that comic. I'm not sure if it's in the first issue, but it's Superpowers with art and story by Tom Scioli, who now does...
Superpowers as in the old action figure line?
And the cartoon and the comic.
Excellent.
And the art is and story is by a guy called Tom Scioli, who does a comic called Transformers versus G.I. Joe, which is notable for making Transformers versus G.I. Joe like a comic, like a toy line in the comic. So he has a very cheeky sense of humor and likes to play up the absurdity of things that a lot of comics would say are super cool. He makes super fun and absurd. So I think that'll be pretty much a treat, that backup, when it hits.
Mm.
Yeah. And what else did Jared say? He said that Grant Morrison encouraged him to find his new weird, because what was weird when Grant Morrison wrote the Doom Patrol, everything's changed now. So you've got to find what's weird these days. So.
Yes.
Yeah. So the other thing that happened was the New York Comic Con on the last weekend, and there was a variant issue of Doom Patrol number 1 there, which had the picture that was used on the house ads, which showed sort of the Euro cover on the ground with all the Doom Patrol members standing around looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Except they did it in gold foil.
Ooh, fancy. Ooh,
classy. Yeah. And the other thing, they had a panel there where they talked about the Doom Patrol and stuff, and everyone who went to that panel got a Cave Carson song on a cassette.
A cassette. Right.
And hundreds of people wandered the earth wondering if they could find a cassette player. As far as I'm... And, the song was called Into the Cave of Wonders, and I have not heard the song. You can... probably get one of these cassettes on eBay if you are flush with money.
Probably.
Of which I am not.
No.
So that's what went down in New York City. Anyway, is that ticking I hear, Mike?
Yes, it is. Look, over there, the Doom Clock. Alrighty, so we're having a look at the face of the mighty Doom Clock. And we can see that the last issue we had of a Doom Patrol book was issue 2 of volume 6 from Jared Way and Nick Darrington, which came out today. So it's been 0 weeks since the last Doom Patrol book. Oh, God, I love saying that.
0 minutes.
0 minutes. The next issue, number 3, is due out November 9th of this year, which is just 4 weeks away. Hot damn. The last appearance of the Doom Patrol as a team, though, was 1 year and 9 weeks ago in All-Star Section 8, number 3, and Justice League United, number 12. But when we discuss this issue, we're getting there. We're getting closer. There's hints of things to come. This week in Doom Patrol history, released on October 15th in 1964 for a mere 12 cents, was issue 92 of Doom Patrol by Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiani. And this issue saw the team face off against the villain Dr. Time.
Dr. Time.
He was able to control time at varying speeds. And possible spoiler alert, if you haven't read it, the day may or may not have been saved by Mento.
Dr. Time has the face of a clock for his face.
Yes.
With little eyebrows and eyes as well.
Yeah. And that's how you know his villainy is time-based.
Yeah.
We discussed that issue all the way back in episode 16, so you can check that out for further details on the comic. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
So which is the hottest Marvel character?
Iron Man.
Ant-Man. I can't decide between Professor X and Magneto, so both.
Loki.
Is Wolverine Marvel?
What about White Tiger?
What about White Tiger?
Doc Samson.
Who's he?
Star Fox.
That's a video game.
The girls go on a journey to determine every Marvel character's hotness in Ohotmu or Not, the official handbook of the Marvel Universe podcast you didn't know you wanted. Available on iTunes and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Today on Doomsplaining, we're looking at Doom Patrol Volume 6, Issue 2, which came out today. And this was written by Jared Way with art and cover by Nick Darrington, and there's an alternate cover by Mike and Laura Allred. And this is the synopsis, which I'll read from the... This isn't the synopsis. This was the solicitation text for the issue, which I will read first just to give us a bit of a bearing. What happened to Larry Traynor? The hero known as Negative Man is still out there, but he's not exactly the same guy he was back when Doom Patrol was still together. Like a Russian doll, there is a man inside the man, and who knows how many other men inside of them, with the guy on top possessing a mind for mischief that incites violence. Meanwhile, Casey has started rebuilding Robot Man, even though she doesn't know exactly how Cliff Steele ended up crossing her path in the first place. And this was a $3.99 comic that we both bought today, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. Sure
yeah.
did.
Yeah. Now, the cover, it shows Larry Traynor, who is the man known as Negative Man, at the very birth of him being joined with the Negative Energy. So he is just... parachuted down from his plane, which has crashed in the background, and he is in agony with all the radioactive energy coursing through him, making him look a bit like a see-through skeleton face.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't look like he's comfortable.
No. That'd be murder on the knees.
Yes. So, let's go through the comic. Now, we open it and we see this moment is captured. So we see the plane flying in the air. It looks fairly retro. And Larry is inside. And then he's over the radio that he's heading into a radioactive field beyond all sense and reason. But he's advised, don't panic. Your co-pilot should be taking over. And he turns to see his co-pilot is a Russian doll strapped into the back second seat. And then he hits into the radioactive cloud, and it turns him into a sort of a skeletal see-through skin man. And there are voices all around saying, where is Larry Traynor? Where is Larry Traynor? Who is Larry Traynor? What is Larry Traynor? What is Larry Traynor? Where is Larry Traynor? Etc. And then we cut and see him shouting, where is Larry Traynor? And he is in a supermarket. He's knocked over all these Russian dolls, and everyone sort of turned around to stare at him.
Poor guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, two sort of interesting dressed fellows bump into each other, and one of them says, watch it, asshole. And Larry says, hey, buddy, hold on. You going to let that guy get away with that on Zix turf? So this guy's sort of got sunglasses on and a sort of punky look, a bit of leather. And the other guy is sort of, he reminds me of a bit of Biff from Back to the Future 2.
A little bit, yeah.
He's a bigger bloke with a funny cap on that says Howls. And, so Larry starts a fight between these two blokes. And the fight is it's a very eloquent fight. Because, the Zik, when he picks the fight, says, what cheer, pig friend? Fancy meeting a sidewalk from which to be scraped? The other guy says, a baby lexicon? You feeling brave, Dayglow? Anyway, they start to fight, and... Larry is egging them on, and they both notice that he's egging them on, and they don't fight each other, and they end up beating him up instead. And we see him lying on the floor. His sunglasses have been knocked off, and he has weird eyes, doesn't he?
Ooh, yes.
Yes, then we cut to Casey Brink's apartment, where she is in the bathroom, and she's in the bathroom. She's going, ow, ow, and then there's a snap noise, and she has pulled out one of her teeth. And... Right. Yeah, as you do, root yeah. and all. It's not just like it was when you were a kid. And she finds a little note inside her tooth that she pulls out with tweezers and reads it, and it says, good job.
At this point, you have to agree that Jared Way has found his weird.
I think so. Then she hears a bang from the other room and goes out, and there is Robot Man sitting on the couch.
Yes.
Yeah. And Terry Nunn is there, and she's making breakfast. And Robot Man is missing his brain from the skull cavity. And that is in a saucer, a dish of milk on the bench. And Lotion the cat is having a sip from the milk.
Hygienic.
Yeah. Anyway, Casey's very impressed that she's done this overnight. Terry, the cat is protective of the brain. That's what Terry says. So anyway, and then there's a honk honk noise, and Casey goes to the window, and Sam has arrived with the cat, the ambulance, for them to go to work because the dispatcher has called them to. There is an intoxicated male who appears to be injured. The police are on the scenes. So Terry goes off to work, and Casey gets ready for work. Then we have an interlude with a great big panel with text in it that says, "What are you doing, Niles Calder?" And we see Niles, and he's at the foot of a mountain looking at a hot air balloon. Then he gets in the hot air balloon, and it rises slowly. And then he goes past a sort of Mount Rushmore-looking face of himself. And as he rises above it, the eyes on the face and the mouth open slightly, and it looks up at him. So slightly surprised that...
yes.
Yeah. No explanation beyond the pictures there.
No.
Yes. Casey and Sam have arrived at the next to pick up the person who is intoxicated, and it is Larry Traynor lying on the ground, Russian dolls broken near him. The police are there. It's a very hot day, so no one wants to be outside, so the police go and sit in the car, allowing Casey and Sam to sort it out. Larry is saying, "Don't make any noise. I can hear a black dog pissing on a pile of broken glass. The city doesn't want you to know it hates our guts, but I'm here. I'm not pretending." And then the policeman tries to get him up and says, "I'm a negative space in a negative world." Right. And the policeman's had enough. He walks off. Sam bends down to help him, and he sees his eyes after the sunglasses come off, and he said, "Okay, this is new. You're messing around with any chemicals? Get anything in your eyes? Some kind of new junk they're selling on the streets?" And Larry says, "No, sir. I'm a pilot and an upstanding citizen." "Okay, Captain." And then says, "Well, let's get you out of here in the cab rather than taking you to jail. All you got to do is take my hand." And he offers his hand. Larry doesn't take it. And then Sam adds, "I'll give you some cold fruit." Larry takes his hand. We cut back to some voice balloons that we see in the dark that look like sort of robot machine type voices.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, "Did you do that? I don't see anything happening." The other one says, "Give it a minute. Wait, I think it just moved." And then we see that there's a receptors coming in, and they can see the two robots, and they are the weird robot face ones from the Rondo Inn in issue one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they're in full robot gear now. They're not pretending to be people. They've got weird clothing on that looks very Doctor Who, and they've got great big guns. And we see that they have reactivated Cliff Steele. They've put his brain in place, and he's on the couch, and he's tied up. They're pointing great big guns at him while Lotion the cat looks on concerned. Yes, and Cliff's first words are, "Empty waves screaming on a beach, sand on a black sand beach, a storm, the fly, where am I?" And the robots threaten him. So one of them holds a screwdriver over his open, so his skull cavity is open, so you can just see his brain sitting there. And it says, they say, "I'll give you one more chance to answer me before my friend here slides that screwdriver right into your midbrain. Where is the girl?" And they are after Casey Brink.
Mm.
Yeah. And then in one of the most awesome panels I've ever seen in a comic ever, Robot Man kicks the gun up, which goes off and blows the head off the robot behind him holding the screwdriver, and ricochets through the wall. It is amazing, isn't it?
I love that page so much.
It's fantastic.
I love the panel preceding it as well, where they first ask Cliff, you know, "Where's the girl, the one who drives the ambulance?" And his response is, "A girl? I don't know anything about that, but I hope you creeps are hungry because you're going to be eating a lot of my shit."
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right up there, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Great line. Anyway, Cliff snaps the ropes and he is going to get into a fight. And we see that the ambulances are being called to the address, which is 214 East Cedric Boulevard. And as we see Robot Man fighting robots and smashing skulls and crushing guns, Casey goes, "What do you mean? That's where I live." And they're racing off. In the back, Sam is trying to treat Larry. Larry implores him to start yelling at the driver. Then we see Cliff is winning against these robots. He is head stomping one of them really badly.
Oh, God.
And the other one's head is through the wall. In the back of the ambulance, Larry is imploring Sam to get angry. He needs him to get angry. And Sam says, "Oh, we have almost arrived at angry." And then Larry suddenly sits up and sort of belches out some black gunk, a bit like negative energy, out of his mouth.
Yeah.
Yuck. Yeah. Back at the apartment, there's a massive hole in the external wall. And Cliff is putting on his skull casing on top of his brain. When more robots burst in, and then they start talking different languages and blasting him with guns, and he grabs Lotion as he flies through the wall onto the street, and the robots run out after him, and he lands on the street. The Lotion, the cat, runs off, and then we see the robots coming down all the stairs. There's a lot of stairs. Yeah. And, you know, and Cliff has had enough, and in one panel says, "You no good," and in the next panel says, "Stinking lousy," and in the last panel, as he starts unleashing violence, "Crumb bumps." Another awesome panel. And I should point out, this whole time Cliff is just wearing his jacket. He has no pants on, which yes. Is a look I've not seen Cliff sport before.
Look, it still works, you know. It's...
Yes, Cliff continues to fight. He's smashing their heads. He says, "I know I should leave one of you alive to find out who sent you, but I am having a lousy day." At this point, Casey pulls up outside the apartment and says, "Whoa, it's my place, my cat. Where's my cat?" And Cliff says, "He ran away. I'm sorry. There was a lot going on." And then Larry sees Cliff and says, "Cliff, it's really you, Larry?" Cliff says, "Why do you get to be handsome?" Larry gives him a great big hug and says, "I don't know what's going on. My head is full of bad vibes and I can't think straight. I don't know where anyone is, the negative spirit." And then Cliff says, "Hold on and follow me. I got to put on some goddamn pants." Then the ambulance radio comes live and says, "I need you to dispatch you again immediately." And so they're off again. Then we cut to see something zooming through a void, a bit like hyperspace in Star Wars. And it's the negative energy, and it's looking, it's hunting, and it stops briefly and sees a host. He's looking for the host, the one known as Larry Trainer, but he sees a hand, a blue hand with four fingers, a definitely alien hand, holding a Russian doll.
Yes.
And it has another glimpse of two aliens having what looks like a teacher discussion.
Yeah. Again, we've really found our weird here. Thanks, yeah. Jared.
So one of the aliens looks all squiggly. It looks like a poo with little squiggly arms, legs, and one eye. It reminds me a bit of Monsters versus Aliens, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The blobby guy. And he's talking to this other alien who has like a cushion for a head. And said, "Your students' grades have dropped below the marker. No one knows what you're up to after hours, and I've heard from services that you've been sleeping here. Looking at you proves it."
Nice alien voice there, Paul.
Yeah. And then the negative energy says, "They don't believe me. They cannot see me. I am nothing." It zooms on. Anyway, back at the ambulance headquarters, whatever that's called. Is it a hospital? I don't know.
Mercy General Hospital, maybe?
Mercy General Hospital. Thank you. Yes, that's a caption there. That's really good of you to notice. Yes. They're getting a discussion saying, "You disappeared last night. You ran off with hospital property. No one knows what's going on with either of you. You're both suspended pending investigation." And Sam and Casey are quite stunned at this. Because they thought they were listening to their dispatcher on the radio, but apparently it's not their dispatcher. Anyway, Sam is worried about not having any work and money and goes home. Casey goes to the ambulance and notices that the doors are now unlocked at the back. And she opens the doors. And then all this music, song sort of blasts at her. And she shouts, "What is going on?" And then she hears a voice, "Simmer down, love. What's all this shouting about?" And then she's like, "You're sending us everywhere. Who are you?" questions? Well, now that we've got all chummy, you can call me Danny. And trust me, we're doing very important work picking up those pieces. Come closer. And she comes closer to the radio. And then he says through the radio, do you ever wonder if you've already gotten to where you were going? And then suddenly the ambulance falls to bits and she is in a nightclub, like an old style music hall type nightclub with, you know, tables with little lamps on them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a stage with the old, you know, footlights around it.
Yep.
And she's like, what's happening? Hello, what is this place? Where am I supposed to? And then she says, excuse me, miss. And there behind her is Flex Mentallo.
Yes.
And of Muscle Mystery, who is a Doom Patrol character known to people from Volume 2, the Grant Morrison run in particular.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I believe I can help you out. He says, who are you? I'm Flex Mentallo, man of Muscle Mystery, which is what I said. And you're Casey Brink. How do you know that? Because everybody in the cabaret knows Casey Brink. Are you ready? For what? And then he opens the curtain of the stage and says, for Danny Land. And we see there is a magical land like there, much quite similar to Disneyland. And there is a marching band marching past and they're holding banners that say, welcome back, Casey. And there's a Ferris wheel that says, Bona Tavada, which means good to see you, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it looks all magical and fun and a little bit Wonderland.
Yes.
Yeah. And very Disneyland as well. And it says, to be continued.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to say it straight out. I think this is a better issue than the first one.
Agreed.
Yes. There is a lot more action. There's a lot more fun in it. The characterization, like, it's just fantastic. We get less Terry Nunn, which I'm a little bit sad about, but wow, we get a lot of Cliff Steele, and it's Cliff Steele kicking ass.
Boy, do we ever get Cliff Steele kicking ass. That was so well done. And as you said, the characterization was just spot on. It was, when the fight started out, you know, with him kicking that gun that's in front of him, you just knew it was on. And it was just like, holy crap.
Yep. And throughout the issue, I mean, like Larry doesn't have the negative energy, but he's almost a regular person except for his eyes. Mm-hmm. And he is addled, I would say. You know, he knows something's missing in his life. Perhaps that's why he's trying to get people to fight in front of him for his amusement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. He's still got that little bit of, what's the word I'm looking for? This sort of snarky cheekiness to him in this, you know, and like when he was telling, you know, Sam, oh, I was actually trying to get arrested. It's like, why, dude? He's egging on the two street punks to have a fight and they quickly put an end to that. But this negative energy alien that we're introduced to, I think this is something new. I can't recall anything like it in a previous run.
Yeah. And there's, you know, the implication of that Larry tries to get Sam to get cross and that will bring out the negative energy, like the it's reacting to negative emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he almost gets it out. But then you see that there's this other negative energy sort of zooming through the void and it's not the same thing that's inside him. So
no.
You could be right. It could be something else.
So it's I'm really interested to see where that's going because, yeah, I can't recall anything like that from a previous run. So, yeah, Jared Way, you've found your weird dude.
Yeah. Unlike the solicit for the issue, it said that Casey started rebuilding Robot Man. It looks like Terry rebuilt Robot Man overnight.
Yeah, Terry did all the hard work. Yeah.
Yeah, and she makes breakfast too. That's awesome.
I love the little piece of commentary there with, you know, Cliff's brain in the pan next to a cracked egg that it's like, you know, the man that's not entirely whole and, you know, I thought the cracked egg was a nice little kick out of that scene too.
Yeah. And lots of little touches on the radio where Danny starts speaking through the ambulance radio. It says Premiani at one end of the radio dial and Drake at the other.
Mm-hmm.
I love that little detail.
On the ambulance, I also noticed the letters AVM. So I'm assuming that's a nod to Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man, which was cool.
Yeah, gosh, there's so much in this, isn't there?
It's and the scene where Danny the ambulance, or the dambulance, when it falls away, and the minute we were in the nightclub scene, I was like, oh my God, we're back on Danny the Street. And that was just done so well. And then we've got Flex Mentallo back already.
Yeah.
It's
For those of you who don't know, Danny is a sentient street. He's a transvestite street, so he has masculine shops that he dresses up in frilly lace curtains and things like that. So he's got gun shops and things like that. And one of the features of the Danny Street is Danny's Perpetual Cabaret, which is a show which you can go and see. And Flex Mentallo is there already.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, we knew these aliens, these robot alien things were targeting Danny to make Danny burgers, and that's there because Danny is a living thing that grows and can be exploited. But I didn't know that they knew about the rest of the Doom Patrol, so they're obviously targeting Robot Man because they're not surprised by him. But they were going after Casey,
and as Flex said, everyone in the cabaret knows Casey Brink.
Like, yeah, and in fact, it says, "Welcome back, Casey."
Yes.
Yes.
So it's like, wow, what is her story? I've got one sudden theory that in the end of the Grant Morrison run, Cliff and Jane, they went off to Danny the World.
Yes.
Right. I'm wondering if Casey was born on Danny the World.
Ooh.
Which might explain why she's always so cheerful and optimistic about everything, because Danny the World was a lovely place to be.
Yeah.
And somehow I'm wondering if, she was born there and has come across back to quote-unquote our world and has forgotten her true origin. So that's one possible theory, but I love this issue. It was so much fun. It was action-packed. There's lingering plot threads with Casey and who these killer robots are that are out to get her, as well as whatever their plans are for Danny and the inevitable Danny burgers that we know are going to be explored more as well. It's just, and it was funny as well. The dialogue in it, like, when Cliff is getting into the fight, I was laughing at, him saying, "I hope you're hungry because you're going to eat a lot of my shit." Like, that's so Cliff.
Yeah, I know. And it's just amazing. Danny has the capacity to be as small as a brick and then grow to an entire world. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not sure which stage he's at now or how big he is in between, I mean, when we first met him in the comics, he was a street. In the Giffen Clark run, he got reduced to being a brick. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And even in the first issue of this run, we had Ricardo, examining bricks in that abandoned house. Because obviously he believes that Danny is still a brick. But Danny's obviously, you're right, we don't know exactly what Danny is other than an ambulance that somehow is also the cabaret and Danny the Danny Land. Danny Land looks so much fun.
It does.
It's like, wow, it's just, this was so well done. I had so much fun just reading this. And I'm looking at the images again now as we talk. It's such a... The panels as well, like where the robots are running down the stairs with the tromp, tromp, tromp sound effects as, Cliff's getting arced up again and getting ready to take on those stinking lousy crumb bums.
Yeah. I mean, and the art just, it plays it for laughs. It gives you the repetitive nature of them going down one way on the stairs and then down the other way. Mm-hmm. it's just a great contrast between, Cliff getting ready on the street and getting angry.
Yep.
Yeah. And we've got to talk about this scene with the chief.
Yep. I'm loving these Niles Calder interludes.
Well, in the first issue, he was sitting there with a synthesizer in the forest and, looking for the perfect note, and apparently the sound of a fly was what made him happy. And in this one, there's a mountain carved in his, the shape of his face. Now, to my mind, I think I can explain this if Niles is inside his own head.
Yes. Because we have seen something similar to that in the Rachel Pollack run.
Yeah.
Which we won't go into because, you know, it won't mean a lot to new readers to the Patrol, but it might also be a nice throwback for long-time readers of the team as well. But yes, we have seen something similar to Niles' face being in a rock formation, shall we say.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm my guess was that was the continuation of his musical interlude in the forest. You know, he's done that and he's tootling off wherever in his hot air balloon.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he is actually, you know, unconscious somewhere and this is all happening in his head.
Mm, yeah.
And it will come to a head and that will revive him, perhaps.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes.
But as far as Doom Patrol Easter eggs, apart from the cabaret, I didn't spot too much else.
Well, yeah, you kind of had to look for them. There was a Drake Premiani radio. There was,
yeah, an AVM on the ambulance.
But... yeah. So, yeah, I think there was more than enough else going on in the issue to keep us entertained. It was like I did really like the initial scenes with Larry in the jet, and when he looks over at his co-pilot and this little Russian doll just looks up and says, "How's it going?"
Yeah, I guess we should talk a little bit about Negative Man. So in the original 1960s run, Larry. He could spit out negative energy. At some point, I think in the 70s, they had the negative energy transfer to Val Vostok, and she became Negative Woman.
Yep.
And so it was really obvious then that the negative energy was a separate entity and not part of Larry. It was something that had merged with Larry. Mm-hmm. And then in the Grant Morrison run, Larry merged with Eleanor Poole, and the negative energy merged with those two people and formed a sort of... asexual being called Rebus, and at that point there was this obsession with Russian dolls and, you know, what's inside and the repetitive pattern.
Yes.
So, I mean, am I explaining that fairly well?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Russian dolls is a connection to the Grant Morrison run, particularly. Yeah. But I like this world. It's fun. It's a sort of world where someone can have a tooth fall out and it isn't the worst thing that's ever happened to them. And finding a note inside that says, "Good job," isn't that, you know, weird?
Yeah. It's just, okay, right. Now I'll go and check on my roommate who's rebuilt a robot overnight.
Yeah. But, I mean, Casey Brink, weirdness magnet.
Yes, definitely.
Doom Patrol weirdness magnet. So. Yes. You know, the Doom Patrol are basically coming to her because she is there. And she's important. She's not just a random participant in this. You know, the robots want her.
Mm-hmm. She's obviously very important. And the fact that she is known in Danny Land. I can't wait for the next issue.
No, isn't it so good?
We've got, a whole 4 weeks to wait now?
Oh. Yeah. And let's talk about the alternate cover by Michael and Laura Allred.
Mm-hmm.
It shows a close-up of an eye with the classic Doom Patrol, minus the Chief and plus Beast Boy, and Beast Boy in his purple form, which is how he looked in his original adventures.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a pretty cool cover, yeah.
It's a very cool cover. That was my phone lock screen for quite a while.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and anything else we need to say about this one?
I'm going to go read it again, and once we finish this, it's that good. I'd really like to hear, whether you tweeted us or message us on Facebook or on my greatestadventure80.blogspot.com, I'd really love to hear comments from new readers as well. Because I think long-time readers from the Troll, they're going to pick up lots of like Easter eggs and, you know, little things that throw back to earlier runs. But I'm really keen to hear how people who are reading Doom Patrol for the first time, what their thoughts are on this as well. So get in touch.
Yeah, and I think this is probably a more accessible issue because, I mean, the last one ended with that sort of blue person who we may know as the god of superheroes sort of copping a brick in the head and there's a dead lion. And that was a pretty weird note to end things on, whereas this issue doesn't have anything as jarring or disconnected as that.
No. This is... The fact we've got Danny Land there, it's a bit more inviting and exciting. And I want the next issue now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we've doomsplained that one pretty well.
Yeah. Awesome.
It's a beautiful evening. The moon is just rising. A full moon. It will soon be as bright as day.
An ancient evil erupts from the grounds of Supermate's estates.
The House of Frankenstein has risen from the grave.
Step this way to gaze upon an exhibit absolutely unparalleled in the realms of showmanship.
I have a collection of the world's most astounding horrors.
Spine-chilling discussion of classic horror films featuring an all-star cast.
Boris Karloff.
If I had Frankenstein's records to guide me, I could give you a perfect body.
Lon Chaney.
Last night I suffered the tortures of the damned. I killed a man.
John Carradine.
I will come for you before the dawn.
Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing.
There is nothing, do you hear me? Nothing more important to me than the success of this experiment.
Oliver Reed.
I can't, I tell you. I can't remember anything.
Laurence Olivier.
You are a most unusual creature, Count Dracula.
And Frank Langella.
You do not know how many men have come against me. I am the king of my kind.
Plus, your favorite superheroes grapple with the world's greatest monsters.
You'll never succeed with your crazy plan, Dr. Frankenstein.
That's just what Batman said, Superman. And look where you are now.
A Supermates presentation coming in September and October to the Fire and Water Podcast Network. The House of Frankenstein has risen from the grave.
Bag of Doom, where you can tell us your responses to our question of the week last week, which was, who's your favorite character called Mr. Something? Yeah. Anyway, and so we heard from many, many people, and we heard from Sam Hain at Holodil on Twitter, and he said, it will always be Mr. Miracle. Great character, great costume, a lot of fun. I do like Mr. Miracle a lot.
He's pretty cool. Yeah. At Charming Red, who... A lot of people are changing the name for Halloween on Twitter.
Yeah, it's a fad. I don't approve.
So Jessica this week is known as Demonic Dr. Donna. She also said Mr. Miracle. He was smart enough to marry Big Barda. Anyone that smart deserves to be a favorite.
I don't think it takes that much brains to see that you want to marry Big Barda. Anyway, we heard from Abel Padzilla, who's at Abel Padzilla on Twitter. And he said, favorite comic book, Mr. Miracle. Scott Free is the best.
Quite popular. Cash Flag, a.k.a. Al, or at Rebus02, said, Mr. Miracle would be my number one, but Nobody is at number two. Yeah, Mr. Nobody.
Mr. Nobody.
Yeah.
We heard from Between the Pages at BTP blog, and he said, that's easy. Mr. Spock.
Nice. Big Tim Styles at Big Tim Styles on Twitter said, Mr. Gray from Cthulhu Williams. # shameless plug.
That's Tim's comic that he wrote, Cthulhu Williams. I think Mr. Gray's an alien dude who hangs out with the heroes.
Okay.
I think, if I remember correctly, I have read that.
Right.
We heard from Moby One at Shmoby One. He said, Mr. Biscuits from the most recent Martian Manhunter title. I think I need to read that soon.
We also heard from Relatively Geeky at Relatively_Geek, who said, it's hard to beat Mr. Miracle, but I did enjoy the independent series Mr. X. And for you, and for your poppy light rock needs, I recommend Mr. Mister. Right.
Oh, dear. We heard from, well, that was Professor Allen. He's a funny man and a good podcaster.
Mm-hmm.
We heard from Coffees and Comics blog, and he said, there's always Mr. Mind and Mr. Talky Tawny. That's the talking tiger from Shazam.
Shazam, yeah.
Shazam, or Mr. Captain Marvel, as it used to be known before yes. Bloody Marvel Storm. And Professor Allen said, okay, it's hard to beat the talking tiger.
It's true. Jeffrey Brown at Tsujigo, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, he responded with Mr. Nobody. Yep.
Hey, right. Another vote for the Doom Patrol guy.
Yep.
We heard from KMW, Kevin, at Ostrakus1 on Twitter, and he said, it has to be Mr. Miyagi. Wax on, wax off. Nice one.
Yes. Ryan Daly at RyanDaly01, he responded, he gave us three responses. First, Mr. Fantastic. Fantastic Four. Second, Mr. Miracle. And third, Mr. Doctor. A character I might have made up.
It's not a bad name. And shout out to Ryan. He just finished the Secret Origins podcast this week.
Yes.
He did 54 episodes and they're all fantastic. And he's finished that podcast run. Wow. And I think there's one little housekeeping episode to come, but what an achievement.
Well done. Well done, Ryan.
Yeah.
Mm.
We heard a Rift. Rift 1821. My pal Rift. And he said, Mister, will you take my broken wings, Wilfred? But then he said, but seriously, Mr. Sinister was always pretty cool. And Mr. Morden from Babylon 5 was a great character. Oh, the sort of evil KGB type guy. Yeah. And he said, but Mr. Nobody is growing on me. Oh, careful.
see a doctor about that.
And he said, Mr. Mitzelpilik, why? Because he's also part of the DC Who's Who.
Yep.
That's nice. a joke for those who listen to the Who's Who podcast.
Right. Oh, look, it's a message from Aaron Long at Juice005. And he said, Mr. Falcon. That guy in Die Hard who says Yippee-ki-yay on the TV. Right.
Humor isn't for everybody, is it? It's not. It's a skill.
Some can juggle, some can bake, some can tell a joke. Aaron can do something, I'm sure. But he's one of the head honchos at comicosity.com, so he does that pretty well. I'll give him that.
And then we heard from Zavisha, Doug, at DZavisha on Twitter, and he said, I'll tell you this much, it's not Mr. Mister.
Thank God.
He said, Mr. Pizza got us through a lot of late college nights, and he said, Mr. T, pity the fool. He said, Mr. Rogers taught me a lot, and Mr. Ed could take the prize since he's a horse, of course, but I've got to say, scot-free, Mr. Miracle.
Okay. Meanwhile, over on Facebook, we heard from Alex Bowman, and he said, Mr. Nobody is the obvious brain squirt once its query is presented, but I will say Mr. Mind. Has Mr. Mind ever gone up against any of the Doom Patrol?
I love Mr. Mind. He's the caterpillar with glasses on.
Yeah, that's how I thought he meant. I don't believe Mr. Mind ever appeared in Doom Patrol anywhere. Sorry, Alex.
No, he should have. Mm. Yeah. We heard from Justin Partridge on Facebook, and he said, Mr. E, that lunatic is woefully underused. He was the creepy magician bloke from, what is it called, Charge of the Trench Coat Brigade, when right. he teams up with the Phantom Stranger and John Constantine and who's the other, Dr. 13.
Right.
Yeah, no, good choice. But he's not nice. I don't like him. But he is underused. I'd agree with you, Justin.
Okay. And also on Facebook, we heard from Keith G. Baker, who gave his answer as Mr. Right.
Oh, dear. Didn't they have another song, Kyrie? Was
that it? I think that was them, yes. I think that was them. Yeah. You know, two and, you know, that was it, I think.
Two-hit wonder.
Hey, look, better than some people with only one-hit wonders. What about you, Paul? Who's your favourite Mr. someone?
I'm going to go deep into the Doom Patrol bench and say Mr. 103.
Ooh, Nice.
I love that guy. He's the guy with all the powers of the elements. So
or the Mr. Periodic Table himself.
Mr. Periodic Table himself. He can do any of those that he wants.
And wasn't he really was a slippery character. He was like that time he turned himself into, I think, a balloon and filled himself with helium and floated out a window.
Yeah, and he turned into a plane and flew away from the Doom Patrol.
Yeah, he was.
They had a lot of trouble with him. It all came down to the, you know, gas and guns, I think, by the chief.
Yeah.
I would love to see him come back. Jared?
Yeah, come on, Jared. Jared and Nick, you know what we want. For me, Mr. Nobody would be the obvious choice, but I'm also going to say Mr. Fantastic. Because he's kind of similar to Niles, but a little bit nicer, in that he's a bit more caring about his family. Then again, not so much, because he's usually off doing some catastrophic experiment that throws them all in great peril. But, you know, he's essentially a good dad. So
what is it about geniuses that they're always dicks? I mean, I'm the exception to the rule, but most geniuses are really just pretty, you know, they're not nice people.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, it's a trade-off, I guess. You know. So, yeah.
And I believe we have an email.
We do. We have an email and a real live, actual printed on paper letter.
Oh.
As well. And both.
What? Both people still do that?
Oh, apparently so. Both are from Dr. Ange. Love that guy. Do we want his email or his real life letter first?
No, your choice.
Let's do the real life letter first. And also, massive shout out and thanks to Dr. Ange, who quite generously sent me the Doom Patrol Index comics from the Independent Comics Group, published in 1986. And there's some really cool comics just about the initial 60s run. And it's got synopsises of all the original 60s issues and some really nice cover art by John Byrne. So thank you very much for those, Ange.
That's what people used before the internet.
This is true. Yeah. Well, way back in the dark ages of 1986. and he enclosed a letter in it and he said, "Hey, Mike and Paul and Wilfred, I have no idea about the vagaries of international mailing, so I'm hoping this is a Halloween present, although I suppose it might just as easily be a Christmas gift. Enclosed find the two-part Doom Patrol index put out by the Independent Comic Group back in 1986. These aren't going to tell you anything that you don't already know, but it basically covers all the Doom Patrol stories from their time in My Greatest Adventure through their showcase run. There appears to be a nice opening essay about the group with a little who's who type entries for team members and enemies. Still, I think these small quirky books are what makes a completist like me smile. It looks as if the impetus for these were the team's appearance in the New Teen Titans in those early issues. Maybe the average comic reader didn't know who the Patrol were. Probably not, Ange. And they sport some pretty gorgeous covers by John Byrne as well. Anyways, just wanted to say that it is pretty cool how social media has shrunk the world a bit. I'm happy to call you and Paul friends on the other side of the world. And I appreciate your patience with my Men at Work, Olivia Newton-John, and Mad Max references. Hope you enjoy them, Ange.
Well, that's a good segue into his email.
Yes.
Yes, because he answers the question there. And he said, this is in response to a last episode. As I've said before, I haven't read any of the Arcudi run, so I've been waiting for this Doom to be covered. These issues sound wildly entertaining, making me think I need to start scrounging the dollar bins to try and find them. Thanks for covering. You should.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. He said, as for my favourite Mister, there is only one answer. Mr. Jive from the classic Men at Work song, Dr. Heckle and Mr. Jive.
Oh, God.
As we all know, he believes the underdog will eventually survive. Why do you... It's like Australia never had any other music except for Men at Work and...
Olivia Newton-John.
Olivia Newton-John. Oh, anyway. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. We've had lots of other bands and singers, guys, you know, others, you know.
This was just one band out of thousands to us, but to you it's like one band out of three. In Excess, Men at Work and Midnight Oil, and that was about it Australia ever did.
And Air Supply.
Yeah, I don't remember them. It's going back too far.
Oh, what? You're older than me, dude.
I know. I remember them, but...
Try and deny.
Anyway. Anyway, and yeah, he says, I actually struggle to try and pick who my favorite Mister is, and he's actually joking before about Mr. Jive. I like the Captain Marvel villain, Mr. Adam. Oh, he's a robot. He's cool. And I like Mr. E with the E, and I really like Mr. Miracle, but none made the cut. But my favorite Mister is Mr. Mistleblick. It's a Mistleblick. Anyway, but there is nothing like a zany imp from the fifth dimension to bring some laughs to the Superman books.
Mm-hmm.
Though I don't think he's had a good story for a long time. Perhaps.
Fair. Yeah. Oh, well, can't win them all.
Hmm. And we got another email from Martin Gray, which isn't really a response to any episode or question of the week, but he did send us an article which appeared in a Comics Hero mag, which was called Turn and Face the Strange, and it was Will Salmon. Charts the history of the Doom Patrol, DC's answer to the X-Men.
Mm, that looked like a cool article. Quite a few pages dedicated to it as well.
So, yeah.
Mm. Thanks, Martin.
Yeah. And they used the word poodled in it. That's one thing I wanted to say. The interlude with the Chief reminded me of a Monty Python sort of animation.
Ah, yes. I can picture that.
And there's Terry Gilliam.
Mm-hmm.
Weird interludes.
Yes.
Anyway, so I think that's it for the show. So next week on the show, we are looking at some Teen Titans stuff. So there's a couple of Teen Titans bits and pieces that we want to cover. So, ooh. And next week we have a question of the week. And it's a simple one. What's your favourite sequel?
I'll save it. Yeah, already know what it is, but I'll save it.
Yeah, so if you want to respond to these, Mike, how do you do it?
People, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can find us on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. And you can also reach out at mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com.
Yes, Doug will have some pictures up there about this issue that we've talked about today. And you can look there. And really get out in there and have a look, because Doug does a fantastic job. He chooses the best panels from these comics. And, you know, if you don't have the comics with you, this is a great way to follow along with what we're doing. You just have to wait a couple of days after the episode drops. And Doug has a post there. He is doing the tremendous work for us. It's just fantastic. And he's been blogging for years, and it's really, really entertaining what he's been putting there. And he finds some great stuff all the time.
It always blows my mind in a funny way that I first found Doug's blog and, you know, chatted with him a little bit on there, I think, years back. And now here we are, and he's like one of our best mates online, and he's associated with the show now. It's just, you know, it's a funny old world.
I remember having like a vague worry that we were sort of treading on his turf when we started.
Nah.
And, you know, but now he's one of our best mates.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's such a nice bloke.
Yeah, oh, he is. Top
yeah, and he's done a lot of podcasting with Ryan Daly. So, and he's charming and eloquent and delightful. Sound like I should marry him. Anyway,
someone's got a man crush. On that note, let's sign off. We're getting silly.
Okay, thanks everybody.
Thanks, guys. We'll catch you next week for more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.